It's been quite a while since the previous session. Thank you very much for making it. This is actually the last one of the year. Somehow or other, we usually try to end them in May, but I think because of the way it worked out with the cycle of the ones at Shari Shamayim as well as the dental series, we ended up with this as the last one for the series here. But what that means is I am now soliciting topics for next year, God willing. So I'm going to do that formally by email, but please think about it. You know, what sort of things you'd like to see covered. We've done quite a bit over the last few years, but I'm pretty sure there are some areas of medical halacha we haven't yet addressed. So please think about that. I want to thank Qualicare for sponsoring the series. Thank you very much for making this possible. I also want to make sure to mention three upcoming programs that I think will be of interest. Number one is that the YU Beit Midrash is holding a Chabura night here at the Bayit starting on Wednesday night. It's for men and women. The idea of a Chabura night, as I explained in an email that I sent out, a week or two ago, is that instead of learning in a shir, where someone is presenting to you, it's text-based study in which the group all studies a text together. And there will be three simultaneous chaburot going on. Rabbi Ezra Goldschmidt will present, a chabura on Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato's Mesilat Yesharim. And Hillel Horovitz will lead a chabura on Shmona Prakim, the Rambam's work of philosophy, his introduction to Pirkei Avos. And I will be leading a group on Nishmas Avram. Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Avram's work of medical halacha will be starting with his introduction to the laws of medicine on Shabbos. That in and of itself will take us quite a bit of time to cover it. And that will be in the Gruta Beis Medrash at 8 o'clock on Wednesday nights. Text will be provided for you, or in my case, the Nishmas Avram case, I'm going to email around the link to the PDF, and that way you'll be able to print it off as it comes up, because yeah, the file itself is about 45 meg. You know, I'm emailing you the file. But that's in terms of Chabura night. Second is that on Sunday night, a week from tonight, we'll be holding a program in memory of Rav Soloveitchik. His 20th yahrzeit was on Chol HaMoed Pesach. You may know that YU is doing a big program today in New York to commemorate it. So we're bringing in Rabbi Azariah Berzon. Some of you may know him from his years as Rosh Hashiva at Shaim of Aseret Zion. Some of you may know him because he was our Sagan for our first 2 years as a Beit Midrash. So that will be at Shari Shamayim a week from tonight at 7:45 is Mincha, and then the program itself at 8 o'clock. And then last, but definitely not least, is that we're starting a new program here at the Bayit for women called Midreshet Yom Rishon. It's mirroring a program that goes on in New York. It's a program in which there will be two back-to-back shiurim. It'll be 10 a.m. on Sundays. And the idea is to have serious learning for women and in some cases by women, so that each week there will be two shiurim. And at least one of them will be given by a woman from the community. Our first week is next week. It will be Rebbetzin Grisman and then Hillel Horovitz. And then the second week we have Rabbi Karabkin and Rebbetzin Shira Lipner. And then the third week myself and Mrs. Sarah Freiberg and so on. There's a flyer out on the bulletin board outside. You can see all the topics there. If you're on our email list, of course, you've already seen this flyer. But God willing, that will be a good opportunity. That's co-sponsored with Bayit Adult Education and Bayit Sisterhood, and there will be refreshments as well. So that's Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Some of the shiurim will have video recorded on KosherTube, so the males who can't be there in person can watch it online. Okay. Please make sure that you've signed in, both so that I can follow up for the shiur, and also for those who are looking to get continuing medical education credit. That's the only way we can get you credit, is if you're actually signed in. And the last preface before we actually begin, but the most important one, is that, as always, I'm speaking about halachic topics, but for practical halachic questions, please make sure to ask your shul rabbi. Okay. Medical care on Yom Tov. This was a topic that was requested when people requested topics at the end of last year. This was one that was particularly requested. The question of how the laws of medical care on Shabbos change when you're dealing with Yom Tov. And the laws do change. What we need to discuss is what changes, how it changes, why it changes. And I brought two cases in order to illustrate the two different types of issues we confront. The first case involves a woman by the name of Sarah. Sarah is 30 years old. She has a sore muscle, which she treats with a hot water bottle. May Sarah heat up water on the stove with a burner which was left on before Yom Tov? On Yom Tov, I am allowed to heat up water on a burner if I want to drink the water. Is she allowed to heat up water to use in a hot water bottle? Would we distinguish between the first day of Yom Tov and the second day of Yom Tov when dealing with this? I actually I did a trial run of the first half of this shiur over Yontif in a shul in New York, and there someone made sure to mention to me that it's a bad idea probably to use water that's going to be that hot in your hot water bottle. So I'm assuming that she doesn't heat it up quite so much, and the water is safe, and so on. The point isn't the specific case. The point is the question that's behind it. What would you do with this case? What would you say?
That raised the second question. Is that allowed to add cold water to dilute?
Adding cold water to dilute it is a good question as well. This is true. But the core question, the starting question here, are you allowed to heat up, this is cooking, are you allowed to heat up water in order to use it for a medical purpose on Yom Tov? Let's say it's bad enough that she's confined to bed.
In that case, yes.
We have a yes, and a yes.
In that specific case.
In that particular case, even though you are cooking on Yom Tov, you're violating a deoraisa.
Yeah.
Why would it be allowed?
Because it's called a kol gufo, if she's limited to that.
Let's say this was Shabbos. If this was Shabbos and someone was confined to bed, you would allow them to violate a biblical prohibition?
No.
I'm not so sure that that's true.
It's ochel
nefesh. Ochel nefesh, what do you mean?
Well, it's cooking. But on Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook, and if it's ochel nefesh and it's shabbat l'kol, then you should be able to extrapolate that this would be permissible.
So Laser points out indeed why this is a question in the first place, which is that the principle of ochel nefesh, based on a pasuk which we will discuss, permits me to cook on Yom Tov for the sake of someone's eating. So the question now is, will I say that this is the equivalent of eating, or apply the principle of mitoch, which is a separate principle, to expand from eating to medical care as well? And that's really the main question. Those are the two main questions that we need to address within this case. Before we address this case, I'm going to mention the second one, and then we'll come back to the first one and go through this. The second case you see on your sheet. Jeff, age 23. My point in bringing the ages here is simply to say we're not dealing with a small child, and we're not dealing with someone who is elderly. We're not dealing with someone with some other complicating health condition. I didn't mention any other complicating conditions. Jeff, age 23, develops a low fever. Preliminary examination of symptoms indicates a non-dangerous virus. May Jeff take Tylenol pills on the first or second day of Yom Tov? What would you say?
He's not bedridden.
He's a low fever. It's an annoyance. It makes him uncomfortable. He's not going to want to sit at the Shabbos table, at the Yom Tov table, very long. So we say no. Why not?
It's a mechush.
It's a mechush. It's an ache. Okay.
Not enough.
We're sure. No, of course we're not sure. We have to discuss it. Otherwise, this wouldn't be a shear. There are things we have to discuss regarding both of these cases. But the reason I divided them as I did is because the first case is a case of biblical malacha, right? The case of cooking on Yom Tov. The second case is a dirabbanan. There's a rabbinic prohibition against medical treatment on Yom Tov. I'm not dealing with life-saving cases. Those are a separate topic. But there's a rabbinic prohibition against taking medicine on Shabbos. Does that apply when it comes to Yom Tov? Avi?
In the first case, would applying the hot water bottle also be a questionable act?
Applying it, would that be the dirabbanan?
That would be, so that would also include the
That's true. Right, that's true. Okay. So let's go to our first case. biblical malacha on Yom Tov. The specific case is cooking on Yom Tov. So the rule indeed is that you are allowed to cook for the sake of food on Yom Tov. The Torah says, "Ach asher ye'ochel l'chol nefesh, hu levado ye'oseh lochem." That which will be eaten, that which people will eat, that you may do. So that which is needed for a Yom Tov meal may be done on Yom Tov, within certain bounds. So there are certain things I'm allowed to do, certain things I'm still not allowed to do. There are certain malachos that are permitted. So, for example, we're going to see more about this in a little bit, but to use perhaps a little bit of a distant example, I could shecht an animal in order to cook it on Yom Tov. That would be allowed. What I would not be allowed to do would be, let's say, I wanted to go buy the animal and I had to sign something in order to be able to purchase it. That would not be allowed on Yom Tov. Certain preparations are permitted, certain actions are not permitted. That's something to keep in mind. We're going to come back to why that matters later on. But take a look at source number one, which says, Ein bein Yom Tov l'Shabbos, elo ochal nefesh bilavad. There is no difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos other than regarding food. Rabbi Yehuda matir af machshirei ochal nefesh. Rabbi Yehuda permits even preparatory steps, backup steps that will be needed in order to get to preparing the food. Take a look at source number two, which is the expansion of this heter, of this permission. We already said you're allowed to cook food. Now we'll find out that you can do more things because you're allowed to prepare food. Source number two. Tani Tana Kamed Rabbi Yochanan. A certain sage taught in front of Rabbi Yochanan the following lesson. Hamivasho Gira Nasha Bechalav Biyom Tov Va'achalo. This is an overachiever. Someone who is trying to see how many laws he can break at once. For those here who went to law school, you may be familiar with hypotheticals, where they give you questions that you then have to break down in terms of what's the rule for all the different factors that come into play. I imagine there's the equivalent in medical school as well. Here's a complicated health scenario, and now you have to break it down in terms of the questions that need to be asked. It comes up in halacha quite a bit. It's a good exercise. So here's the question. You have somebody who cooks gid hanasha. Gid hanasha, the sciatic neurovascular bundle, is in of itself not kosher. You cooked it in milk on Yom Tov, and you ate it. Well, how many things are wrong in this picture? Loke chamesh gets 5 sets of lashes. Loke mishum mivashel gid. First of all, he is liable for cooking the gid hanasha on Yom Tov, because it's not a Yom Tov meal. Right? Veloke mishum ochel gid. He's liable for eating gid hanasha. Veloke mishum mevashel basar b'chalav. He's also liable for cooking a meat and milk mixture. Veloke mishum ochel basar b'chalav. And he's liable for eating meat and milk. Veloke mishum havara. And by the way, he's liable for lighting a fire. That's your set of 5. Omar lei, to which Rabbi Yochanan says, that's not true. Poke tini livra. He says, go learn that outside. Meaning, that's not accurate. Your source is incorrect. Why? Havara ubishul eina mishnah. The prohibition against lighting the fire and the prohibition against cooking, they don't belong in this text. V'imkim talomar mishnah, and if you'll say they do belong in the text, beis shamayi. It's the view of beis shamayi. Why? De amri lo amrinan mitoch shehutra hutzah letzarech hutranami shelo letzarech. Hachanami lo amrinan mitoch shehutra havara letzarech hutranami shelo letzarech. He invokes the principle of mitoch. And the principle of mitoch says, since I'm allowed to perform certain malachos on Yom Tov for the sake of food, I'm also allowed to perform them for other purposes, which are not food purposes. He talks about it specifically in terms of 2 malachos, 1 lighting a fire and 2 transporting something, but we see the application here already, the application of this principle to bishul, to cooking, and the idea is that even if my goal is not to eat food, nonetheless the malacha may be permitted. Everyone clear? Okay, does everyone have sheets, even those who came later? There are sheets up here, I think, still. So the principle of mitoch says, even where it's not for food, it may still be permitted. So the question then is, could we permit medicine either as food or using the principle of mitoch. So if you take a look at source number, well, no, not source number 3, I take that back, hold up for a second. There is no halachic authority I could find who was willing to say that medicine counts as food. That medicine is ochel nefesh automatically. Mitoch, maybe. But not that medicine counts as food in and of itself. Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher, in his series Torah Shlema, quotes an obscure medrash to argue that it's explicitly prohibited. When the pasuk says, "Ach asher ye'ochel," that which will be eaten is permitted. The medrash he quotes in source number 3 says, "Ye'ochel velo lerefuah," that which is eaten, not that which is used for medicine. As I said, this is an obscure medrash. This is not in one of your normal bodies of medrash. Michilta, Taras Kohanim, Medrash Rabbah. This is in a work called Medrash Chefetz. And he acknowledges it so, that it's obscure. But it's consistent with what we say in other areas of halacha. So for example, when it comes to Shemitah produce, the Torah says, Lachem yehyeh le'ochla, you're allowed to eat Shemitah produce, but the Gemara in Sukkah says, velo le'refuah, velo le'melugma, not to be used for melugma, which is a certain type of medicine that one might drink. You're not allowed to use it for medical purposes. When it comes to the law of Arla, the rule of Arla is that one is not allowed to... the rule of Arla is that one is not allowed to use the fruit of a tree from the tree's first 3 years, but it only says kol eitz ma'achal. That's true for trees that are used for eating. However, says the Radbaz, that doesn't apply to trees that are planted for medicinal purposes. The rule of Arla will not apply. So both for lenient purposes and for strict purposes, we do have a precedent for saying eating does not include medicine. I saw a hand. Yes?
Why did you say mitoch maybe? I mean, isn't mitoch across the board?
I didn't get to mitoch yet. I'm getting to mitoch in a second. Hang on. You'll see why it's confusing. I would have expected to permit it under mitoch as well, but we have to get there. My first point is that it's not called food. That's the consensus of authorities. Again, I didn't see any serious halachic authority who was willing to say this. I only add the caveat serious because I don't remember seeing anyone in those who I looked at. So I'm saying that in order to save myself in case someone finds somebody. I didn't see anyone who was willing to make that statement. What about though including it in mitoch? As Dr. Libman says, why couldn't I say that it's another purpose? Since it's permitted for eating, since cooking is permitted for an eating purpose, let it be permitted for medicinal purposes as well. And the answer is that logically it should be there. But we have a couple of problematic sources to deal with. Take a look, please, at source number 4. The Talmud Yerushalmi in Maseches Beitza. It's talking about preparing a treatment for someone who underwent circumcision, not a life and death treatment, but something to mitigate pain. Shochin atze besamim lemila biyomtov. You are allowed to grind up spice wood for circumcision on Yom Tov. Avalo b'Shabbos, but you're not allowed to grind it up on Shabbos. So that's a source that indicates that you are allowed to do a malacha, in this case grinding, right? In order to treat someone medically, it's not a life and death case, it's just a matter of mitigating pain, you're allowed to grind it up on Yom Tov. That seems to invoke the principle of mitoch. This is a positive source. This is a source that seems to permit. But then take a look at source number 5. Also from the Talmud Yerushalmi, and it says, Rabbi Ba. Rabbi Ba is Rabbi Abba. Yerushalmi has a habit of dropping vowels at the beginning of words. So Amar becomes Mar, for example. So Rabbi Ba, Ba Kame Rabbi Mana. Rabbi Abba asks the following question in front of Rabbi Mana. Mahu migbalta biyom tov. Are you allowed to knead on Yom Tov? And I added in brackets the explanation of the Karban Ha'edah. He's talking about kneading something in order to prepare an ointment for the eye for Yom Tov. Are you allowed to do that? And Amar Le, Eino Ochel Nefesh. He says, that's not Ochel Nefesh. That's not for eating, and therefore it is prohibited. So now I have a problem. if you're telling me that medical care is permitted on Yom Tov because of Mitoch, why doesn't it show up in source number 5? And we have other sources like that. The Rambam in Hilchos Yom Tov brings sources to say, for example, that one would not be allowed to bathe his whole body on Yom Tov. Leave aside the question of showering on Yom Tov. It's a fun discussion in its own right. But the Rambam says one is not allowed to bathe his whole body on Yom Tov because it's medicinal. So why not? Why wouldn't I invoke this principle of Mitoch? Does anyone know a reason why I wouldn't invoke the principle of Mitoch? Meaning? Explain.
That for something to be, to apply mitzvah, it has to be something that is applicable to everybody. And a person who is ill is not everybody. It's only a person who is sick on the one hand.
Good. Thank you. So Laser points out that mitzvah has a qualifier. And the qualifier is what we say in Hebrew, as we say in Hebrew, shav elochol nefesh, that the benefit that's going to be drawn from your malacha has to be a benefit which would be the same for everybody, which anybody would enjoy. So the question now is, does medicine fit into that category? Now, the truth of the matter is that the requirement of shav elochol nefesh is actually subject to debate. Not everybody agrees that we have such a requirement in the first place. The discussion originates in a Gemara in Ksuvos Daf Zayin, which is beyond the scope of what we're going to deal with here. But take a look at source number 6, a comment from Tosfos in the Gemara in Shabbos. He says, he's surprised at a comment made in the Gemara itself. He says, "Demaishna have ara derechitza, may have ara dezeya." He asks, "Why is lighting a fire for the sake of bathing different from lighting a fire for the sake of sweating?" Deshari mideoraisa kedemuchachasam, which is biblically permitted on Yom Tov. He doesn't mean lighting a fire from scratch, lighting it from an existing flame. Why is it that he says, I am allowed to light from an existing flame in order to heat up water, in order to enable me to sweat, to do a sauna, but I'm not allowed to heat up water for bathing? What's the difference? So he says, Va'omer Ri b'shem Riva, the Ri, one of the authors of the Tosfot, quotes the Riva to say, Derechitza eina el tanug va'asura. Bathing is only for enjoyment and it's prohibited. Mishum de'ein shava l'chol nefesh. Because not everybody bathes every day. So writes Tosfos, writing, of course, 800 years ago in France and Germany is where the authors of the Tosfos live. So he says, not everybody bathes every day. That's not necessarily a requirement for people to survive, and therefore it doesn't count. V'chein mashma b'Yerushalmi, and so it seems in the Yerushalmi as well. D'ainu taima, this is the reason. D'rechitza, for bathing. Avol zeya, shavei hilochol nefesh. But everybody goes to sweat in the public baths. That everybody does on an ongoing basis, that's everybody's benefit. De'ena tanug el abrius, that's for health, not for enjoyment. So the point that Tosfos makes is that when we say, even if it's not for eating purposes, it's still permitted, that's only if the purpose is one that is universal. That's Tosfos' argument. Now, the truth of the matter is that when you look at the Gaonim who precede Tosfos, the heads of the yeshivos in Babel between the 7th and 10th century, they don't mention this principle at all. It's not a principle you find explicitly in the Gemara. Tosfos is deducing it from the fact that we permit this and we don't permit that. He's looking for what the difference is between the cases. And he says, well, this is a universal need and this is not a universal need. But Tosfos is not drawing on any apparent earlier source. The Rif, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, writing in Morocco in the 11th century, does not mention it. The Rambam, whose father studied under the Rif, does not make any explicit mention of the principle of shav elochol nefesh at all. So the question is, does this really matter, this principle? The Aruch HaShulchan has a discussion about why the Rambam doesn't mention it, but it would take us too far afield. But the Mishnah Berurah, writing in his Shar HaTzion, it's in Siman Tav Kuf Yud Aleph, explicitly defines Shav HaLachol Nefesh, the requirement that the benefit be universal, as a debate between Tosfos on the one hand and the rest of the world on the other side. As a matter of practice, though, we good Ashkenazim follow Tosfos. We follow Tosfos, whether it's lenient for us or whether it's not. Tosfos is a major legal influence, and the Shulchan Aruch seems to follow it as well, based on a comment by the Taz. So the question now is medicine food? We decided medicine is not food. The question is medicine a universal benefit? Make the argument. Is medicine a universal benefit? Well, I don't mean like universal health care. That's not my question. Is the specific medical treatment, to go back to our initial case, Sarah who needs the water bottle, is that universal? You're saying yes. Why? I saw yeses at this table.
Eventually
everyone might need it. Could need it.
Not everybody's hungry at the same time, so therefore you can't cook because I'm not hungry.
If you're going to tell me, Zev makes the point, if you're going to tell me that it's not universal because only people who have backaches need the hot water bottle right now, then the same thing is true regarding eating. Now, the truth of the matter is you can't apply it to eating, because eating doesn't need to be shava l'chol nefesh, because eating is explicitly permitted in the Torah. But we can say for any of the benefits that we expand under mitoch. Nothing is needed by everybody at the same time, so there's always going to be a limit on it. So take a look at the Ramban's note. In source, yeah, please.
Is that true? I mean, the question comes up in the Gemara as to whether you could eat a delicacy, and whether that is something that you could chef on Yom Tov.
Mm.
Right? The case of... Seems that there is this idea of shava l'chol, even at the level of shita.
That's interesting. I had forgotten about that. I want to look into that. Because I can't answer that one on one foot. It's a good question. The answer to this question is that the questioner is indeed correct, as shown in the Gemara in Ksuvos Dav Zayin Amud Aleph regarding shechting a deer on Yom Tov. The idea of shava l'chol nefesh, that in order for an act to be permitted on Yom Tov, it must produce a benefit which is universal, is not only a principle within mitoch, but it's also within the greater category of ochel nefesh. In other words, the permission for me to perform a malacha to produce food on Yom Tov would apply only to producing food which is universally consumed. Take a look at source number 7, please, with Ramban. Ramban, in his Torah Sa'adam, in the section called Shar HaMechush, which deals with medical issues, writes, Mikchol Eina Mishum Machshirin Hitiruhu K'Rav Yehuda. He says, treating the eye is permitted on Yom Tov, like the view of Rabbi Yehuda, who said, Machshirei Ochel Nefesh, backup steps are permitted. Lefishu Davar Ashav Alachol Nefesh, because that's something everybody does. Shav Habri and Kochlin, this was an eye treatment which everybody applied. It wasn't just applied by people who were ill. Aval Tzarchei Cholesh, She'eino Shava B'chol Nefesh, but needs of a patient which are not universal needs, Vu Asur Min Hadin, Dumya de Mugmar, Ein Osin Ela Al Yedei Goy. If they are like Mugmar, Mugmar is where they used to burn spices, and that would create a nice aroma. Things that involve a direct biblical prohibition, he says they can only be done by someone who isn't Jewish. A Jew would not be allowed to do this on Yom Tov. That's the statement of Ramban, is that this is not going to be permitted on Yom Tov. He will not permit medicine. He says it's not considered a universal need. That's the argument on one side. The argument on the other side is everybody wants to be healthy, and therefore, even if not everybody is ill right now, nonetheless, everybody is pursuing health. Those who are healthy, great. Those who are not healthy need the medicine in order to become healthy. So the Avnei Nezer of Avram Borenstein wrote in Arachayim Beis Shin Tzadi Dalid that the argument could be made that medical care is indeed shava l'chol nefesh, it's universal, and therefore it is permitted on Yom Tov, and that Tzitz Eliezer of Eliezer Waldenberg supported him in this view. So what we have, to sum up before we get to some practical statements about this, is, number one, we permit malacha, we permit biblically prohibited malacha on Yom Tov for ochel nefesh, for the sake of food. Medicine seems not to be considered a type of food. However, we also permit malacha for the sake of other things. Tosfos limits it to that which is shava l'chol nefesh, that which is universal. And we've seen two opposing views. One view that says, this is not a universal need, because not everybody needs this treatment right now. That was one position, that's Ramban's position. Versus the position of the Abnei Nezer, medical care is needed in order to make a person whole, to make a person functional as everybody else is, and therefore it's a universal thing. Just like eating is to restore me from hunger to being full, everybody wants to be full. So those who aren't full right now will eat. Those who are full are not going to eat. Along the lines of Zev's point. Potentially. Oneg, Simcha, whatever, however you want to play that. Yeah. Yes?
What about medicines that are food meds, like you're taking it for health, like calcium or
vitamins? Oh boy. So that's going to be in part two. Just wait. That's going to be in part two. Not in so many words, but you'll see. I think you'll see where we go with it. So because of the debate regarding applying mitoch, the general assumption is that malacha will not be permitted for the sake of medicine on Yom Tov as a matter of the the norm in halachic rulings. If you take a look at source number 8. This is a statement from Shlomo Zalman Orbach in his Shulchan Shlomo. It's quoted by Rabbi Dr. Avram in his Nishmas Avram as well. He says, "Lachame mayim b'shvil chole vaday shari, mishum dechole hare kol ritzono hu sheyelo cham kemo lachol adam. Ela dekevan shu chole hare yutzone yosir me'achirim utzrichim lachameim avuro." He says, heating water for a patient, meaning where you want to provide heat in the home. He's not talking about the hot water bottle there. He's talking about where you have a system with a radiator, and you're going to heat up water in order to heat the house. He says that's permitted, because all he wants is to be warm like everybody else. That's considered shava l'chol nefesh. That's a universal thing. The ube'emes mitam zet sarech iyun dechol refuah hayelanu lechoshva kana ashav alechol nefesh. And he says, the truth of the matter is, then I have to wonder, since it's true that you're allowed to heat his house because that's a universal need, why wouldn't I say that for everything that a patient needs? As indeed the Abnei Nezer wanted to say, Shari sof sof tachlisahu sheyeye bari kechol adam, because the goal in the end is to make him healthy like everybody else. Ah, efsher de kaven de baria notel sam ze eno nene klum lachen chashiva peula zu ke eno shava l'chol nefesh. It could be, he says, that since if you were to apply this treatment for a healthy person, it would do nothing for them. I'm not even assuming harm, but it would do nothing for them. If they would take this medicine, it wouldn't do anything for them. If they would apply the hot water bottle, it wouldn't do anything for them. Therefore, it's not called shava l'chol nefesh, it's not called universal. Because he's not looking at it in terms of the need, he's looking at it in terms of the treatment. Is this a treatment which is universally positive? That's the way he's looking at it. Mashein ke benidon didon, harechimum abayis, havishaper gam lanas bariyim. He says when it comes to heating a house is for everybody. Whether they're healthy or sick doesn't matter. That is something that's truly universal. So therefore, he says, he will not allow heating the water for the hot water bottle. Of course, because he is a Shlomo Zalman Orbach, he doesn't stop there. He says, so I'll tell you what you can do. He doesn't stop with, this is us or go home. He says, I'm going to explain to you how you could do this permissibly. You have a pot of water that you're heating up on the stove for the sake of drinking. Add extra water to the water that you're heating up for drinking. There's no extra action involved because it's all in one pot anyway. And then once you've heated up your water, you can siphon off some of it and use it in the hot water bottle. Because you're allowed to increase what you're doing for the sake of drinking. So Shlomo Zalman says, I won't permit it for medicinal purposes directly, but here's a way that you'll be able to end up heating up the water. And again, as I noted in the beginning, do this safely, because if the water is too hot, you'll end up hurting yourself. But that's the Yom Tov Rishon. That's the first day of Yom Tov. What about Yom Tov Sheni? What about second day of Yom Tov? Second day of Yom Tov is a matter of minhag. The reason we observe Yom Tov Sheni is not because we are in doubt about the calendar and think the second day may really be the first day. Thank God we are not living in a situation where we are completely lost as far as our calendar. The second day has the status of minhag. Therefore, the Shulchan Aruch downgrades the consideration from a d'oraisa, from a biblical consideration, to a rabbinic consideration. I'm not going to go through this inside, just in the interest of time, but you can see it in source number 9. The statement is, the Rama says, you would have a non-Jew be the one to do it. There's some debate, maybe you could also do it with a shinui in an abnormal way, that's subject to some debate, but then there are leniencies that you can work with, because you're dealing fundamentally with a rabbinic prohibition rather than a biblical one. So in practice, the answer to Sarah, in case number one, well, the answer to her is go ask your shul rabbi. But what emerges from what we've seen is that on the first day of Yom Tov, she should heat the water for drinking, and then she has the extra that she can use for the hot water bottle. On the second day, she could ask someone who isn't Jewish, or potentially, they're subject to debate, some will say she could do it in an unusual way, set it up in an unusual way, and then she'd be able to use the water that was heated. It doesn't mean she needs to apply the hot water bottle in an unusual way. That's not the issue. The issue is setting it up to be heated in a way other than the norm. Andrea?
What about, we have hot water taps. Can she fill it up from a hot water tap?
So in the event that your hot water tap functions in a way that's permitted for heating up water for drinking, then the answer ostensibly would be yes. In other words, even on Yom Tov, not all hot water taps are going to be fine. The question is, when I turn on the hot water, does it start a system like some of the newer instant hot methods? What's it called? Always on or something like that? I forget what the term is for it. I don't remember. It's a variety within instant hot, where the moment you turn the thing, you are now turning something that was off on. That will be no good. However, the one where it just heats the water regularly and there's a thermostat, and when it drops below a certain level, then it heats it again, so you're turning on the tap is not a problem, and Bishul on Shabbos for the sake of drinking is fine, therefore you can use the water for other purposes. On Yom Tov, thank you. On Yom Tov, for the sake of drinking, is fine. Therefore, it'll be fine for this purpose as well. Yeah, I think that would work.
Okay, well, most of us don't drink hot water from our tap. We may wash our dishes on Yom Tov with hot water. But if we're filling up from hot water tap?
So that's interesting. That's an interesting question. Will his leniency apply in the event that the water is clearly not for drinking? So that's a very interesting question, because there are other potentially permitted uses of this hot water. So without getting into the whole question, because I'm not prepared to give a share on it right now, but the question that I alluded to before, of the bathing on Yom Tov question, do we consider bathing to be Shavah L'chol Nefesh today, when today most people shower on a daily or almost daily basis? Do we consider bathing to be, in our society, a universal need, such that heating up water for that purpose would be permitted? And therefore, again, she'd be fine, assuming that she uses hot water from the tap for washing her face and hands, or whatever. That's a potential. But again, I'm not prepared to discuss that now. Okay, that's our first half. Our second half is going to involve something that's going to get me in a lot of trouble. But as I learned when I gave this shiur, the first half of this shiur once before, when I did it over Pesach, I can't get away with giving the shiur without this question. So I'm going to start the question, and we'll see where it takes us. And this is the second half. Our case was the case of somebody taking Tylenol for a low grade fever on Yom Tov. This is a dirabanan issue. The issue is that we have a rabbinic decree that one not take medicine on Shabbos, lest he come to grind ingredients to make medicine. Take a look, please, on your sheet at source number 10. The Rambam quotes it. Hatzarich laduk pilpalim v'kayotze bahen. Someone who needs to crush peppers on Yom Tov, or crush a similar item. Litein l'soch hamachol. I'm sorry, on Yom Tov, on Shabbos. Litein l'soch hamachol b'Shabbos, because he wants to put it in the food. You're not allowed to grind things on Shabbos. That's biblically prohibited. But, he says, what you can do is use the handle of a knife instead of using your standard implement that you would use to crush things, and you do it on a plate instead of in the mortar that you would normally use to hold them. You would not be allowed to use a mortar because that's grinding. And therefore, the Rambam continues, a healthy person, and when he says healthy, he doesn't mean truly healthy. He means someone whose life is not in danger. Someone who is not dangerously ill is not allowed to take medicine on Shabbos, shema yishkok samamadim, lest he grind ingredients for it. That's the rule on Shabbos. Okay? And that's what I'm going to get into trouble with in a minute, but let me get it and do it in my own good time. But that's the rule for Shabbos, is you can't take medicine. We're not talking about life-saving situations, but in general, you're not allowed to take medicine, lest you grind ingredients for the medicine. When it comes to Yom Tov, though, grinding is permitted. So therefore, ostensibly, this gezeira should not apply. You should have no problem taking medicine on Yom Tov, whether it's a nutritional supplement or whether it's anything else. Take a look, please, at source number 11, where the Rambam writes in the laws of Yom Tov, Dachin es hatavlin kidarkan. You are allowed to crush spices in the normal way on Yom Tov. Shem yoducho son mi ba'erev yafok taman. Because if you were to grind them on Erev Yom Tov, they would lose their taste. Meaning, it's not an open-ended permission to grind. It is if the ingredient could not be ground before Yom Tov because it wouldn't be good. In the same way that we allow you to shecht the animal on Yom Tov because they didn't have refrigeration for their meat, and if you shechted it on Erev Yom Tov, you wouldn't have meat to use on Yom Tov. The same thing is true when it comes to grinding. You couldn't grind it before Yom Tov. When you ground your horseradish, for those who used ground horseradish on Pesach, right, as maror or just for fun, if you ground it on Erev Yom Tov, you found that there was no kick to it once you got to Yom Tov. Someone once told me a method for preserving the kick. He said you add vinegar. It's a good idea, except that if you use vinegar, then it's what's called kavush, and then it's not valid for maror. So don't add vinegar. But the point is, for our purposes, I am allowed to grind for need on Yom Tov. Therefore, there should be no decree whatsoever. So as I said, when I gave the first half of this shiur, I was meant to give the whole shiur, but I didn't get to the second half because of this question. You're talking about a decree lest you grind up spices. Lest you grind up medicine, right? On Yom Tov, and it begins with a question regarding Shabbos. Is that really valid as a decree in our day? Most people who take medicine do not grind the medicine. Right? I was in a position in which Maisa Shaya Kahaya, for me, on Pesach, I had the flu. Not a good time to have the flu. But I didn't grind anything up in order to take medicine. I took whatever I took, various things at different times. But the point is that most people are not grinding anything up for the sake of their medicine. Therefore, should this decree even exist nowadays?
So,
on Shabbos. Leave aside Yom Tov, on Shabbos. Yes?
For people with swallowing difficulties or specific diseases, it does exist.
Right. So, hold on one second with that thought. First of all, there is a running debate in halacha regarding whether decrees disappear once their reasons disappear. Those who were at the Avodah Zarah Shir at Shabbos between Mincha and Maariv recall that we discussed this last week. For example, the Gemara in Beitza says that you're not allowed to clap, to dance on Shabbos, lest you mend instruments. So Tosfos says, today we don't mend instruments. You have to go to a professional if you want an instrument fixed. So therefore, Tosfos says, that gezeira does not apply. The gezeira is not relevant for us. On the other hand, the Aruch HaShulchan's reaction to this is that it's nonsense. He says the reason for the gezeira was to ban a different kind of clapping, not what we do today. But you don't repeal gezeros. The Mishnah Berurah writing on that says, don't listen to him, don't follow this, unless it's for the sake of a mitzvah. If it's for the sake of a mitzvah, then fine. Like dancing on Simchas Torah. But you find a conflict in sources as to whether you remove a decree once the reason for the decree is no longer present. It comes up regarding washing mayim achronim and the concern for harmful types of salt, coarse salt that are going to be in your food and might get on your fingers. It comes up in the discussion regarding leaving water or wine uncovered and then drinking it later on. And concerned that a snake might have gotten into it, but that's one question in its own right, is would you remove a decree if the reason for it is gone? The second question, as Albert notes, is the reason for the decree really gone? Because there are people who grind things up. Let's say they cut them small enough to be swallowed. That potentially is indeed a violation of grinding. The Tzitz Eliezer of Eliezer Waldenberg discussed this. For those who want to look it up, it's in volume 8. Section 15, number 15 within that, he discusses this question and he says, well, lots of people use homeopathic remedies in which they will indeed grind things up. And he has much more in his discussion there. So there are still concerns for grinding. And then the other point, which I think is worth noting, I think this it should be expanded upon at some point, but it's only a subtopic within our shir. I think one of the reasons why there isn't greater discussion about repealing this is because we have leniencies for all levels of need. Meaning that we say don't take medicine because grinding is often done for medicine. However, if someone comes to the rabbi and says, you know, I can't even walk around, I have a fever, I have a headache, whatever it is, 9 times out of 10, depending on certain of the circumstances, how close is it to the end of Shabbos, how bad is it, and so on, the rabbi's going to end up telling them, take medicine. So it's not as though there's an imperative, there's a push of, we have this gezeira that's creating an untenable condition. It's not so. We tend to have ways to deal with it in cases of need, and I think that may be why there isn't such a push to look at this gezeira.
Is there a distinction between grinding a prepared medicine already versus the gezeira shikasama money, which is the preparation of the medicine by grinding?
Yes, there may well be a difference. We do distinguish between grinding something that was already ground once before and then was pushed together and grinding something that had not been separated. There is potentially such a discussion. Yeah. Okay. That was all just a side note, but I felt like I had to mention it here because, like I said, when I did this over Pesach, I didn't get to the second half of the shiur. Everybody wanted to know more about this gezeira, about the decree in the first place. The truth is, this was rather tame. The question now is, will this gezeira apply on Yom Tov, or will I say, since you're allowed to grind for need on Yom Tov, therefore you're allowed to grind therefore there's no concern regarding medicine? We just learned that medicine is not food. Correct. So therefore you'll say that this grinding would not in fact be permitted. But potentially. So let's take a look at what the sources do with this. Take a look at source number 12, please. The Gemara in Beitza. Amemar shara lemikchol eina b'yom tov sheni shel Rosh Hashanah. Amemar permitted treating an eye on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Amar le Rav Ashi la Amemar. Rav Ashi said to Amemar, the Ha'amar Rava, but didn't Rava say, Meis b'yom tov rishon yis'asku bo amimin, b'yom tov sheni yis'asku bo Yisrael, v'afilu b'shnei yamim tovim shel Rosh Hashanah, ma she'en kim beitza. Didn't Rava say that we are lenient only when it comes to handling a corpse, taking care of a dead body on the second day of Yom Tov, but not when it comes to an egg? The egg discussion is a separate discussion. An egg that was laid on the first day of Yom Tov may be used on the second day of Yom Tov. That's not within what we're discussing right now. The point of what we're discussing right now is that the statement is made that we are... The statement is made in that Gemara, we are lenient on the second day of Yom Tov I'm sorry, the statement is made from Amemar. Amemar is the point. That Amemar permitted treating an eye on the second day of Yom Tov specifically. Take a look now at the Ritva in source number 13. The Ritva says, "V'lo chayshin al meshchikas samanim." We are not concerned about grinding the ingredients for the medicine. Kevan de biyom tov mutar lishchok pilpul and vitavlin litzarach yom tov. Since on Yom Tov you can grind for food, peppers and spices, therefore you can do it for medicine. V'lo asurel of Shabbos. They only prohibited medicine on Shabbos. Shashchikas on asura devar tara v'lesbehu mitoch. Where grinding is prohibited biblically on Shabbos, and therefore you won't apply the principle of mitoch. Then why did he say only Yom Tov Sheni, the second day? V'ilu b'Yom Tov Sheni rishon asru kevan shein b'davar shum sakana ve'ino yodeh v'berurim teha hana magas b'Yom Tov. He said, the first day of Yom Tov they prohibited for a separate reason, because there is no danger in the situation that Amemar was dealing with, and he doesn't know whether the benefit will arrive today. I'm going to come back to that last point in the Ritva in a couple of minutes, but the point that the Ritva makes here is that the prohibition against, the decree against medicine on against medicine on Shabbos does not apply in a case of need on Yom Tov. That's what the Ritva is saying. He wants some level of need, but not a great level of need. He's willing to say you will be allowed to prepare this, and therefore you're allowed to take medicine. Take a look at source 14. The Maharam Hurwitz, his comments appear in the back of the Gemara, says, "Ubiyom Tov leka gezeras isa refua klal." On Yom Tov, there is no decree against medical care, against medicine, I should say. Delo gazru al shavus b'mekom tsar b'yom tov. They didn't make the decree in a case of pain on Yom Tov. So indeed, there are those who say there is no concern whatsoever when it comes to medical care on Yom Tov. That's indeed one position. However, the problem that we run into is that we have certain sources that say you can't take medicine on Yom Tov, explicitly that say it. Take a look at source 15. Well, this is one is implicit. The Tosefta is parallel to the Mishnah, but wasn't canonized in the Mishnah. It's a separate unit. Shosin mei zivalin umei dekalin v'kosi karin b'moed. It refers to certain medicinal drinks. In the interests of time, I'm not going to discuss what they are. But you're not allowed to take certain medicines on... I'm sorry, you are allowed to take certain medicines on Chol HaMoed. The implication is that you're allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed, you're not allowed to do it on Yom Tov. Why am I not allowed to do this on Yom Tov if you're telling me there is no decree? So the answer is that there are a couple of different answers that one might suggest. One answer that one might suggest comes from the comment of the Ritva in source 13, the one that the part at the end, which is you don't know that one is going to benefit today. Meaning it's entirely possible that the medicine will not be effective. So therefore, maybe I don't have sufficient grounds for permitting grinding. That's one approach that is offered.
But that then brings into question the use of antibiotics at all. They won't work.
Because they won't work today. Correct. And that's one approach. A second approach to why this would not be allowed is source number 18 in the Magid Mishnah, commentary to the Rambam and his laws of Yom Tov. I'm skipping 16 and 17. Not that it's not important, but it's not important enough for right now. But in source number 18, you see another position, the position of the Magid Mishnah. He says, "V'yesh lomar sheikilu b'machshirin lefi she'ena ne'achalin be'atzman." He says, some say that we are lenient in allowing you to grind preparatory items on Yom Tov for food because they are not consumed. And the intent is only to use them to make other items usable. I'm trying to figure out how that worked. Right. Because the idea is that when you when you are tochein in general, when you grind things in general on, the core case of grinding is grinding up grain that you're going to use to make flour, to make bread. The item itself is going to be of use to you. That's the key biblical prohibition. When you grind something in order to use it. If I grind something in order to use it to make something else edible, that's not really the biblical prohibition anyway of grinding, because it's not for the sake of this item. And therefore we can be more lenient. So the point that the Magid Mishnah is making here is, when I deal with medicine, I'm grinding this to use it. It's not for the sake of making something else usable. Therefore, it will be prohibited. The idea is, the leniency of grinding on Yom Tov is only when it comes to spices, because spices are not an end product. Medicine is an end product. That would be another potential reason to prohibit. There's a third point that is raised regarding this, and that is source number 19 by the Sfas Emes, Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh Leib Alter. He argues, and I'll say it outside in the interests of time, but you can see it in source number 19, that sometimes the medicine itself is going to cause a decrease in your enjoyment of Yom Tov. He talks about a medicine that might cause vomiting as one example. And he says, maybe the argument should be that it has a bad effect on your enjoyment of Yom Tov, and that's why it won't be allowed. So what we have, let me give the big picture on this in case. Number one, it seems clear at first glance that the decree of don't take medicine on Shabbos should not apply to taking medicine on Yom Tov, because I'm allowed to grind for food on Yom Tov. That would be the instinctive approach. The Maharam Hurwitz took that approach. Others took that approach. However, I do have a couple of sources that indicate that I'm not allowed to grind on Yom Tov. Well, I'm not allowed to take medicine, on Yom Tov. Why not? So three possible explanations that we've seen. One explanation is because the benefit may not come today. Unlike the Yom Tov meal, the benefit may not come today. Number two, because the grinding that's permitted is where the item itself is not the end product. It's only meant to make something else usable. And number three, the third possibility, is because the medicine may decrease your joy of Yom Tov. So those are the potential reasons why one would not permit on Yom Tov. So what happens in practice? How do halachic authorities deal with this? Well, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, in source number 20, says you are allowed to take medicine on Yom Tov. He gives some clarification on it, though. He says, "V'nilmod michlalo miperusha shel shnei gaonim ela," from the general statements and the specific language used by these two sages who we quoted before him, he says, we could learn about potential leniencies regarding taking medicine on Yom Tov. He says, since the Sfas Emes's explanation was that the issue is that the medicine may decrease your joy of Yom Tov, so if that's not true of your medicine, then you can take the medicine. Right? In other words, most medicines that we take, let's say a painkiller certainly, like Tylenol in the case that I gave, are not going to eliminate my joy of Yom Tov. Therefore, it would be fine. Clear? That's number one. Number two, he says, The Avnei Nezer had made the point about medicine that won't help you that day, but where you do expect that it will help you that day, like in the case of the Tylenol, you expect the effect to be right now, or 20 minutes from now, then again, he says, you would be allowed to take this on Yom Tov. So Rav Waldenberg, following in the shoes of Rav Shlomo Kluger before him, who seemed to be very lenient and then sort of hedged at the last minute in his writing on it, but Rav Waldenberg does not hedge, he says, if it's going to work that day, and it's not going to damage your Yom Tov enjoyment, you would be allowed to take it. And he says, especially, you ask the antibiotic case, especially if it's a medicine that you started on before Yom Tov, where we generally are more lenient if the medicine began beforehand, because you don't want to lose the effect that you've now built up from the medicine. There are others who are strict. The Mishnah Brura, for example, in Tav Kuf Lamed Beis, I brought it in source number 22, Oh, I'm sorry, but I jumped something first. Rav Elyashiv in source 21 was asked about somebody who has an ache, whether he could take pills on the first day of Yom Tov, and he quoted, he calls it here, Rav Elazar Moshe, he means the Maram Hurwitz, and he says, someone who is not dangerously ill would be allowed to do malacha for the sake of healing him. He doesn't need to be dangerously ill. The same is true for a patient with a mere ache. He is willing to be lenient regarding taking medicine on the basis of the Maram Hurwitz. The Mishnah Berurah was against. The Mishnah Berurah was strict, as you see in source number 22. Dr. Avram Steinberg in Israel says that the Tzitz Eliezer must not have seen the views of the Mishnah Berurah, the Chai Adam, and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, or he would not have been as lenient as he was. Which I find to be a remarkable statement. I have to find a way to ask him about this. But that's what he said. He said that they would not have been. He said that Rav Waldenberg would not have been that lenient if he had been familiar with those sources. So what it comes down to is, sorry.
After checking my notes on Dr. Steinberg's point, I realized that I had stated it incorrectly here within the shiur. What Dr. Steinberg says, and it's printed in the bound volumes of Asya in volume 1, pages 36, 37, is that Rav Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer, was not familiar with earlier positions which led to the views of the Achronim, the Chayei Adam, the Mishnah Berurah, and so on. Rav Waldenberg is clearly aware of the position of the Chayei Adam, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and Mishnah Berurah. He actually does quote them in the Tshuva. Dr. Steinberg's point is that the Tzitz Eliezer draws his proofs from certain sources and does not mention the earlier sources that fed into the prohibiting view, and Dr. Steinberg says that Rav Waldenberg was not aware of those earlier sources.
But when it comes to the first day of Yom Tov, you have this machlokas, and what that means is, again, your shul rabbi is the authority to consult, but what it means is, in the case of need, you certainly have the authorities to depend on who are more lenient regarding taking medicine for the first day, and then certainly when you deal with Yom Tov Sheni, which is itself a derabanan, there are many more who will permit. The Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa quotes the Mishnah Berurah in source 23, the last source on the sheet, to say that taking medicine is fine on Yom Tov Sheni, even for on the second day of Yom Tov, even for light pain. Even if you do have such a decree and so on, it would still be permitted. It's already, we're at the 1 hour mark, but I will stick around for questions for those who have questions to add, but I also Craig has an announcement to make, and I'll give the floor to Craig for a minute.